beyond loyalty.
You here to take me in, O'Connor?
Oh, no.
She's my friend, too.
Beyond borders. Beyond limits.
I'm going with you.
I ain't coming back.
Fast and Furious.
This is where my jurisdiction ends.
New model.
And this is where mine begins.
Original parts.
What's to stop someone from telling them you're a cop?
The same thing that's keeping me from telling them why you're really here.
Welcome to the second episode of Who Shot You Presents the Fast Cast. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwa, and today is the second installment of our month-long series of episodes where we dissect and discuss every Fast and Furious film there is. Today, we're going to discuss the third and fourth films in the franchise, The Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift and Fast and Furious. Of course, I had to bring in some movie experts, so I brought in the family. We have Alonzo, Duralde, and Andrea Clark. How are you guys?
Hey, Ify. Hey. Drifting began in the mountains. Did you know?
Yeah. Oh, we're going to be talking a lot about that because I did know. This is.
I want you guys to know I'm good. I'm just sitting here with my ice cold Corona, ready to just chit chat with you guys, my family. I don't have friends. I have family. So this is great.
Yeah, we're going to have to do a real introspective on how much money Corona and Nos put into these movies because they have not, now that I've finally seen Tokyo Drift, I know they haven't skipped a movie.
Oh, and Castrol pops in for number four, I think.
Oh, yeah. That was great. And we also had to bring in the big guns this week. So we've got a comedian, podcaster, certified Fast and Furious freak. Some would say the Rome to my Brian. I went out to Barstow, saw him crashing cars, and we fought. But now we're together. It's Matt Apodaca. Welcome.
What up? What up? Hello, everyone. Wow. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm so excited to talk about these movies.
Are you thrilled that he made you the Tyrese instead of the Vin? Or that he made himself the Paul Walker.
I was about
there's
to
a
ask.
Lot to there's, dig
there's,
into.
There's certainly a lot to dig into there. I am upset, but I do. If I'm anyone in this, I'm Rome. But make no mistake, if he is Tej, and
wow. I you know, agree to disagree. I guess
I was thinking it. I didn't want to say it.
But. All right, well, before we get started, Matt, what's your relationship to the Fast and Furious films?
I don't remember the first time I watched the first one, but I remember being very into it and then when Too Fast, Too Furious came out, my mom was actually working at Mitsubishi Motors at the time, and this is nuts. The big car in that movie that Paul Walker drives is the Mitsubishi Lancer Evo 7. And it was such a fast car. It rules. It was not street legal in the U.S. We were just so excited to see that my mom's work was in this movie. And she had nothing to do with it, but she got to lease cars as part of a perk for her job. And so when the Evo 8 came out, that was street legal in the U.S. So she leased that for us because we liked the Fast and Furious movie so much. We had that. We had the Eclipse. I don't remember life before watching the trailer for 9. I was so pumped. I was at work screaming at my desk watching the trailer for 9 and just being like, everybody get over here. Look, it's crazy. And just losing my mind watching this thing. I have such deep love for these movies. And I rewatched all of them in preparation for being here today.
Yeah. Now I'm watching them as they come, taking them piece by piece. All right, y'all, let's get this thing started. We're going to start with the synopsis of the Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. And we're going to take the synopsis from IMDb. An American teenager named Sean Boswell is a loner in school. However, he challenges his rival for an illegal street racing race. And he totals his car in the end of the race to avoid time in juvenile hall. He is sent to Tokyo to live with his father, who is in the Navy. As soon as he arrives, he discovers a new, fun, but dangerous way of street racing in the underworld of the streets of Tokyo, Japan. This was written by the user Infinix on IMDb. Let's get initial thoughts before we get into Dino Test. I know there are people who like it, so I will allow them to go into it. But
allow us to talk before you get condescending about stuff no one else thinks matters. Awesome. It's interesting because I said last week that I'd seen all of these, and as soon as I started Tokyo Drift, I was like, oh, I have not seen this. And I probably skipped it for the reason a lot of people didn't, which is it doesn't actually feel like a Fast and Furious movie in the sense that they immediately shift the action. It makes sense when they are trying to retool something that they want as a franchise and to be able to take advantage of the name and the culture. But they need to rejigger it since they've lost all of their cast. They've lost all of these key components. So they automatically take something which was like adult and involved law enforcement or whatever, and they make it a high school story and they set it in a completely different country. And I thought they did a great job of bringing me to a different place, making it high school believable in the culture clash issues that come with that, but ultimately about the cars. And I will say I was more interested and thought this was stronger as a standalone than the other two we've seen so far, in the sense that, like, A to B to C, this story makes the most sense. And it's also the only one that I've seen so far where I understood that, like, some kind of practice had to go into the racing itself. Like, yes. There's, you know, that a lot of these, they're structured after sports movies. So, of course, there's often the kind of, like, montage. But the montages have been typically about the mechanics. And this was this kid who always liked racing and was a good driver learning how to do a particular kind of driving. And I really liked watching that, and it made the races more interesting for me as well.
I also like the fact that this isn't a movie where, like, the white guy learns how to do a thing and then becomes the best at it. He does become good enough to beat this other guy at a race, which is, you know, the way the movie is structured. But it's not like he's this sort of miraculous white chosen one who's there to sort of, like, show everybody else the real way it's supposed to happen, you know. I like this movie a lot, too. It is my favorite one up until we get to 5, which is a giant pivot point for this franchise, and we'll get into that next week. And I think, you know, obviously, I think it's, you know, your feelings about 3 depend on what you thought about 1 and 2. If you really like Vin Diesel and you really like Paul Walker, and those are the reasons why you're coming to these movies in addition to the car stuff, then yeah, you're going to be like, well, what's this? Who are these people? But for somebody who doesn't have great affection for those performances or those characters, I do think this is an interesting way to expand the universe. And I think that it plays an important role down the road in so many ways. It brings Justin Lin into the fold. Mm-hmm. It gives us Han. It takes us out of the sort of quotidian of races and crimes and, you know, drugs and whatever, and puts it into sort of a larger canvas. And we start to see, like, while the physics still matter in this movie, we haven't gone full-blown, like, Looney Tunes Marvel yet. They are starting to play around with, like, expanding the boundaries of, like, what is going to feel logical in these movies. And I like Lucas Black a lot. That performance gets a bad rap. I think he's good. I've always liked him. And I think he totally works for the function of this film. I think it's a lot of fun, and it is one of my top ones for sure, and I like it much more than 1, 2, or 4, which I think are the collectively least interesting films in this series.
I believe Lucas Black to be a man from the South. He is a Southern man, I believe.
Yes.
His Southern accent sounds like he's doing it in a school play. He's like, I don't mean to criticize anyone's performance at all, but. And I think this is going to be, this is me saying something. I'm shaking.
It's a safe space, man.
He is, I think, by far the worst actor in the entire franchise. And that's, like, saying something to me. Like, there's not a lot of good performances across the board. But I think I would put him at, like, the very bottom. And especially in this movie, because The actor who portrays Han, I think, is one of the more interesting characters in the movie. And if he pointed
arguably
out,
arguably one of the hottest men in the world.
That dude is a hunk. And yeah, he has such good charisma. I would watch an entire, I mean, he should have just been the whole movie.
You could watch him snack for hours.
Oh, yeah. Dude's hungry.
Yeah, I agree on Lucas Black. I think he was miscast. He was 20 when this was shot. And yet
let's talk about that.
He exudes the energy of like a 45-year-old man who should be on a tractor, not a race car. Yeah. So, yeah.
Wow.
He didn't fit for me. And it's funny because I also agree. I think Paul Walker in the first few is like very stiff. And like he's not an actor who's comfortable speaking.
No.
You know, just a small attribute for actors to have. But I don't know if it's because he's so exceptionally handsome or what, that it sort of is like, ah, that's fine. That's how that guy talks. Lucas, it's less easy to like get on board with his charm offensive as it is with other people in this whole thing.
Yeah.
I feel like you kind of rock with that acting with Paul Walker because he's kind of a narc in the first two movies. Like he's a cop pretending to be a gang. So it works. It's almost like,
he's an actor who's
faking
acting.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Out of all of the movies in the franchise, Tokyo Drift has the best racing sequence, bar none. Hands down, the best sequences. All the car stuff, A1. Han, amazing, a hunk. I questioned my sexual orientation the whole time. I was like, how could Tyrese not answer that question? Because I'll fuck Han right now. Like, if he came in my house. Like, so here's the thing. There was a white savior thing because, and this is totally only because they did a lot of things. Tokyo Drift did a lot of things that were total, like, just for dorks like me. When he said, are you going to give me that 86 Corolla? That was a reference to the anime Initial D, where the main character drives a 86 Corolla. That was for the fans. When calling him Drift King was a big thing. Drift King is not a throwaway. It's not a nickname in Japan. If you are the Drift King, you are the best drifter in Japan. As a matter of fact, the actual real life Drift King is in the movie. He's one of the fishermen who's like, you call that drifting? That was a cameo by the real life Drift King. So for him to have come learn how to drift in the span of a school year and beat the Drift King is insane.
Does that kind of, and this is total nitpicking, and also white woman doesn't need to be the one arguing against white savior stuff, but
no, it's
if
all good.
You don't know culturally that, like, to me, Drift King was just like a regional nickname. It was like, he was the guy in their neighborhood that was considered the best. Well, it wasn't like, Lucas Black wins this, he's the best out of all of them.
Well, like that's an actual crown comes out.
Yeah. Right. So should we do the dino test? Because
we
got to
get straight into the dino.
The dino test is the thing that's like discussing it on its own, but the dino test is it up against the franchise. So
yeah. So let's go straight first one out of 5 sleeveless shirts. How do we rate the ridiculousness of the title of this film?
I give it a 3 because it doesn't do the crazy like Too Fast, Too Furious or the later ones where they're clearly just trying to like, we'll drop the articles. No, we'll throw the number in. But it does have that element of what the fuck is a Tokyo Drift? Like,
Thank you.
I don't know. I didn't know going in what drifting was, you know, so it's sort of like, you know, if you call it like Fast and the Furious : hot carburetor, like I can work with that. I don't know what a Tokyo Drift
is
before
that
I see
the
movie.
Title.
It was touch and go either way. So I'll go 3 just because as someone enmeshed in the car world, I was like, I don't know what the fuck a Tokyo Drift is, but
that's
okay.
Fair. I'll raise mine to 2.
Even if you're in the car world, that makes no fucking sense. And it's why the car fans turn their back on it. It would be like calling Fast and Furious 1 Fast and Furious American Drag. Like it really just kind of amped up the exoticism.
Sure.
the exoticism.
Especially
and
if
the
actual
like,
drag queens were in it.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, that's when we're going to get our Tu Wong Fu reboot, but done right. But like,
what
it,
if they
like,
reboot
yeah.
Tu Wong Fu with the cast and characters of the Fast and Furious franchise?
You're welcome,
or watch
Hollywood.
That in a heartbeat.
Oh God, yes, yeah. Yes,
it's
yes,
set
yes.
Completely in the world, and it's just they just have to do this thing too.
I love it.
So this one is by what percentage does the craziness increase from the previous film? I'm gonna have a wild answer, so I will let Drea start this one off.
I don't think the craziness increases to me. Like, if anything, this one seems more grounded in a reality, in the sense that the kind of racing they're doing, I can see them. I was going to say rehearsing. That's not what they would call it. So to me, it's not crazier. I'm going to say flat. Zero increase.
I think in terms of craziness, there's not a whole... it's a pretty... Like I said earlier, it's a pretty straight... I think it's a pretty straightforward movie. I do think the craziest thing for me is in the beginning of the movie, in that first race that is scored by... Kid Rock's Bawitaba, which is a song that came out 8 years before this movie came out. So it's an old song that doesn't make sense in this movie. And that to me is the biggest swing of the entire movie.
But it's such a redneck anthem. Started and I was like, oh yeah, got it.
Dave said, every time we think nu metal is going to die, another Fast and Furious movie comes out.
I love that.
Okay, iffy.
All right, I'd say it was pretty grounded for the most part. And then we get to the final act of the movie where it ramps up to 300% when you see someone put a Nissan Silvia engine into a Mustang in an effort to be like, look, we're all coming together. This is when you lost the car, people. This is when you lost it. You're going to put this through the whole thing. You've been seeing the marrying and the like brother-like rivalry between imports and domestic cars. And then you're just going to jam the two together, like make them kiss.
Someone's got to in these movies.
Do any of the characters exhibit superhuman powers or capabilities?
No.
Yeah, no. I'm going to say that. I think that's the easiest one.
Yeah,
that's
no.
Well, Han rolls a 20 on charisma, but that's about it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's going to go 30 minutes if I keep
rolls
talking about
Han. Rolls a 20.
Most memorable line for folks.
I have one.
Okay. Yes.
It is when Bow Wow as Twink says, I don't think outside the box, I tear it up.
My memorable line is also going to be my pick for most homophobic scene, which is when Twink is introduced and looks at the food and goes, yeah, the food around here, just like the military, don't ask, don't tell.
Yikes.
You know that lovable statute for the military that we all
2006,
enjoy.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you definitely nailed the most homophobic moment. Gayest moment has to be like when DK gets up in Sean's face. In Sean's face.
Yes.
Like
so
millimeters away. And it's like, oh, would you guys just make out already? Come on.
Yeah.
Even the Vin cameo at the end.
Which is the unofficial theme of all of these films. Would you guys just make out already?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like the dialogue in at the end cameo with Vin and Sean in their respective cars. Sean's like, I didn't know Han was into American Muscle. And Vin goes,
yes!
He was when he was rolling with me. And I was like, these dudes are going to fuck.
Yes, that was hot.
Yeah, Dave and I looked at each other like, okay, we hear you.
Yeah.
I mean, so any known drama around the movie? I don't have any drama offhand for this movie.
I have something. I don't know if it's necessarily drama, but I think it's an interesting tidbit. So that cameo at the end of the movie where Vin Diesel, races Sean, The movie was testing poorly, and so Universal went to Vin to come film this like reshoot for a cameo. And the only way Vin would do it is if Universal relinquished the rights to Riddick, which they did.
Whoa.
And he made the next Riddick movie independently.
Vin Diesel is a good businessman.
It's so shocking to me.
Producer.
That's a big boy money move, and I love it.
Yeah. He made a lot of... like very tight producer calls with all of these.
He's a savvy man.
Smartly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's just give the final NOS canister reviews. Out of 10 NOS canisters, how would you rate the fastness and furiousness of this movie?
Well, that's tricky because I think this is a solid film, but I don't think that this really reflects the franchise as a whole. So if I'm rating the franchise as a whole, the fastness and furiousness of this movie, which is this question, it would be lower too. But I do think this is a better film than many of the others.
I'm going to say 8 because I think this is a direction they could have continued to go into felt like it. And I think that we're seeing a lot of seeding for what's going to happen anyway. And again, as somebody who didn't particularly care for 1 or 2, or as we'll soon learn 4, I thought that this worked a lot better than what we knew of the franchise at that point. So I'll say 8.
All right. Before I give my score.
Matt, what about me?
Oh my God. Matt,
you know I don't care what you think.
I guess for me, because I'm thinking about how much I love the sort of the back end of this franchise and comparing it against my favorite 7. Like that, I would give 7 a 10, no, easily. But this one, it's the one I've probably seen the least. Is maybe my second time watching it, and I think I liked it more this time, but compared to the first time I had seen it. So I mean, I would have to say this is probably, I would give it a maybe 4 because it's not one that I am thinking about like watching a bunch. But I do think for what it is, it does like a good job, and we wouldn't have Han in the rest of it, so that gives it a little extra bonus for me, because like Han is necessary to the family, in my opinion.
Yeah, I feel like here's the thing. Before I give my thing, anyone who has told me that this is better than Too Fast, Too Furious is anti-black. And first off and foremost, I'm gonna just come to you, yeah, anti-black. And because this movie treats Japanese culture like the people who were in Japanese class with me my freshman year in Long Beach City College, which is like, look at them, they're so cool, they're so great. But that being said, this movie does have the best sequence. Like I will eat crow on that. The best racing sequence, hands down. The most true to racer cameos, but everything else seems to fall apart. But because of that, I'm going to have to at least give you 5 NOS canisters, because you really did. There were moments where you really did connect with the community that you were kind of doing this for. And as much as I, dislike many things, it's still a car that with racing scenes that goes fast, that touches on the racing community. And you can't be less than a 5 when you do that. So that's that. We didn't do the music, but I will have to say the craziest thing, even though I rank this movie as the worst in the franchise, this film has Teriyaki Boys' Tokyo Drift, which is the best Fast and Furious song in the franchise. It slaps. I listen to it constantly. That's a 5 out of 5 slaps. Just hands down 5. No, that's a 10 out of 5 slaps. 10 out of 5. We took the NOS, put it in the slaps, and we redlined. We got to take a break after that. I definitely need a sip of water. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about 2009's Fast and Furious just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Hey, I'm Janet Varney, host of the JV Club podcast. High school. Was it a time of adventure, romance, and discovery?
Class of 95, we did it!
Or a time of angst, disappointment, and confusion?
We're all tied together by 4 years of trauma at this place, but enjoy adulthood, I guess.
The truth is, it was both. So join me on the JV Club podcast, where I invite some great friends like Kristen Bell, Angela Kinsey, Oscar Nunez, Neil Patrick Harris, and Keegan-Michael Key to talk about high school, the good, the bad, and everything in between.
My teenage mood swings are getting harder to manage.
The JV Club. Find it on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Matt Apodaca,
Alonzo Duraldi.
Now it's time to move on to 2009's Fast and Furious. Drea, would you mind reading the synopsis of Fast and Furious that we took from IMDb?
Yes. All right. Heading back to the streets where it all began, two men rejoin 2 women to blast muscle, tuner, and exotic cars across Los Angeles. That's a sentence. And floor through the Mexican desert. When a crime brings them back to L.A., fugitive ex-con Dom Toretto reignites his feud with Agent Brian O'Connor. But as they are forced to confront a shared enemy, Dom and Brian must give in to an uncertain new trust if they hope to outmaneuver him. And from convoy heists to precision tunnel crawls across international lines, two men will find the best way to get revenge. Push the limits of what's possible behind the wheel.
At first, I thought you said they were blasting tuna across the streets from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Because that is a running joke in the first movie, but not this time.
Car tuner has been a thing. That was written by user Universal Studios. If you were wondering about this IMDb user's commitment to car themes throughout the writing.
Oh my gosh, I just love it.
It's so good.
All right, before we get into the dino test, do you want to go some initial thoughts?
I mean, you know, this movie has a lot of corporate decision-making on it, you know, like, clearly, like, okay, well, that didn't work. You know, Tokyo Drift was the lowest grossing to this day member of the, you know, of the franchise. So they're like, okay, let's go back to basics. We'll restart at square one, put all the players back on the board. You know, but we've got Justin Lin directing, and he's going to, you know, hopefully give it that little oomph of the car sequences. And, you know, I guess that then ultimately comes down to, like, how badly did you want to see these pieces on this board again, you know?
Yeah, I think this is such an interesting case study if you're wanting an idea of how studio decisions are made when it comes to casting, franchise world building, and a lot of the stuff that I'm sure limited their audience from the first one beyond the people who were super upset about whatever flux capacitors they were using. You have like an acknowledgement that a high school setting is not going to be as interesting for this, that although they want international flavor, having it feel very American in base, you want older adult themes along with the non-high school narrative. So they're bringing that in and also recognizing that like it or not, like they, or no, they like it. Studios like building stars if they can like, then have those stars and take advantage of those stars. Exactly. And so for them to be like, oh, okay, so it's not just Dom. It's not just like, we've tried bits and pieces of this, but like, you know, this studio also had to start acknowledging the importance of family, you guys. And and that's really what this fourth installment shows us.
For me, it totally made sense. Watching this in succession with Tokyo Drift, it pointed out why it just didn't fit for me, which is at the heart of all these movies in the Fast franchise. It is the premise, the soul of these movies is the ridiculous ideas of using cars to solve basic, you know, federal crimes. Like, that is the soul. And that's why Tokyo didn't work, because they were it was just a good car movie. It was just a good movie about cars. Whereas like, no, Fast and Furious, you have to find some contrived way to use cars.
We've got
to
crack this case. Bring me somebody who can drive really fast.
Yeah.
And for some reason, their unabashed commitment to it just ends up working every time, because they're like, no, we're gonna, you have to use cars. Yeah. So it's almost as if like when if I was sitting down with Naomi and I was like, all right, what do you want for breakfast? I don't care, but you have to use cars, Dad. You have to use cars.
We've got elite jet fighter pilots. No, I need car people.
Yeah.
That is one of the things I love about this one, is because like in the first one, they established that like they're criminals. They're stealing combination DVD VCR players from trucks. And then now in the opening scene in this movie, they are robbing a train filled with like, isn't it gas or cars or something? Or is that another
one?
Yes. Yeah. They're robbing a train in this
petrol.
One.
Well, it's a chain of
gas. A chain of tankers.
Yeah. It's the chain. It's like a convoy, but in one semi that just has these like cabooses on a semi truck, all full of gas. Yep.
But let's get straight to the dino chest and get right into, out of 5 sleeveless t-shirts, how will we rate the ridiculousness of Fast and Furious.
Five.
Oh, wait, the title? Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
How will we write the title of this being the exact same title of the first film minus articles.
Yes.
I don't know why you'd think that was ridiculous.
I almost missed this film because I thought it was a re-release.
Yeah. I feel bad for like archivists and librarians having to deal with movie titles of late because like you have three movies now called Shaft. And you know, and then you've also got The Fast and the Furious and now Fast and Furious. And it's like, oh, come on.
And like thinking of how this would be listed alphabetically because it would be Fast and Furious and then Fast parentheses the and Furious parentheses the, like, to have them alphabetical.
Fast and the so, Furious, yeah. comma, yes. the, yeah.
Just for all of those, I agree. Five.
Hoo-wee. What do, let's even go. Why do we even need to ask? By what percentage does the craziness increase from the previous film?
100%.
Holy moly.
Several hundred percent.
Yeah,
I was going to say 1,000%. We see a man get shot and not react. He not react. And the only reason we know he's hurt is because later on, there's blood droplets on the ground and he's like, you gotta fix that, man.
Like a leaking oil pan.
I mean, the craziness, if you're looking at just the cars, like we were talking about how grounded the racing, I mean, absurd, but grounded the racing was attempting to be in the third one, to this, they're literally like, he's leaping from cars. They're swinging off things. It is all in these subterranean. I don't know if under a mountain counts as subterranean.
Yeah, yeah. Underground.
Like, yeah,
yes. Border.
With like old, like I'm like, whatever men like dug that tunnel with single shovels and put up these rickety wood things. Yes, absolutely. I believe in the structural integrity of that mountain path. It was so ridiculous.
Pieces just breaking off as they bump into them, but it's all good. Yeah. We're all
let
good.
Alone, again, similar to two, the idea of people like these cartel guys who run these huge things being like, okay, I have this big thing going on. Who can I bring in two people that I've never met before? Can I involve them in this big thing I have going on? That's what I want to do.
I remember when I saw this movie thinking like the whole GPS nonsense in the first race, like even for year already looked ridiculous and hokey. But now I realize that that's the movie's way of getting us ready for all of the tunnel sequences, which look terrible. Like I think that we never see after this movie is that like all the big racing stuff now happens in the light of day or like at least outdoors under the moon, whatever. But all the tunnel stuff, it just looks like, oh, so this is all cartoon now. Like everything is animated. Nothing is remotely real. And, you know, like forget physics. There's not even like a visual sense that anything is happening here.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we have the next one, which is do any of the characters exhibit superhuman powers or capabilities? And I was going to say, see previous question.
We also learned that Dom is apparently impervious to grief because even though he is driven by revenge this entire movie, he is also very happily flirting with Gal Gadot's character.
Oh, and so
it's,
true.
You know, and then later he's going to knock up somebody else. And it's like, dude, you know, I know you're all about Letty, but boy, could you like maybe give yourself 3 months to be alone and think about her.
And remember, and as a reminder, because we've seen this movie so close, Letty, he's known since a child. This is the love of his life, who's been basically a high school sweetheart, and within months he's like, I'm still horny.
But I think you can't not put women next to these characters for too long or else, you know, all the gayness really kind of comes to the surface.
All right, let's get to memorable lines. I already have mine right out the gate, which was, you could tell this was like, this was supposed to be the line. I'd be like, damn, that's deep. But when Mia says, are you sure you're not a, are you sure you don't think you're a good guy pretending to be a bad guy when you're really a bad guy pretending to be a good guy? And then Paul Walker goes, think about that every day, Mia.
Liar.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
you nailed that that delivery, Iffy.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, it was,
maybe
I was
you
like,
are
hard.
The Brian.
Yeah, he is the Brian. I don't remember a single line from this film. How's that for memorable?
I wrote one down, and it's
yes.
when Dom is I guess, flirting with Gal Gadot, and
he's completely asexual.
Like, it's so crazy because they gave him so much business to do with all these women. He has just like no sex appeal.
None.
But he says, "I like a good body regardless of the make." So that means he also would like to fuck a car.
Or a dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's keeping it vague.
Yeah.
I do. I like that. It's very open-minded for one Mr. Dominic Toretto.
Yeah, if the body's good, I'm going under the hood.
Oh, Lord. Oh, God. Maybe if he is the Dom. I mean, it's true.
I'm curious, gayest/most homophobic scene in here.
I think what Matt was pointing out earlier, the when Dom starts talking about being appreciating a body no matter what the make, or like,
what
are we talking about
now? look, the Pan and the Furious.
Although,
you know, that's what I'm talking
about. I could also just nod to that one on one, man on man fight between Dom and Brian.
Oh yeah, they were.
This is a franchise that loves men wrestling, which also agree, but it's not even always like fight, movement, whatever. It's just like, ooh, I just want to get close and grapple.
And just hold up. Yeah. You stay right there. Yeah. You stay right there.
There was somebody who once referred to this series as the Fast and the Bi-Curious.
So the movie for this song is easy to miss because they really didn't push it as hard.
They just took the song from the first one and then took the articles out.
This one is from another like mid-grade rapper, much like Ja Rule, which is Pitbull, and the song was Blanco featuring Pharrell. Blanco slaps kinda. It's a slap, but to me personally, Pitbull's voice can be grating on the ears. So I'm gonna go ahead and give it a 3 out of 5 slaps. It's a good song. It's a good one, but it doesn't carry especially if you're following Tokyo Drift, where you're just really carrying the movie on your back in song form and getting people hyped to race. Blanco doesn't make me hyped to race, but I will say it is a song I'd probably listen to its own, but it wasn't pushed as well.
Dale!
So let's go ahead. Out of 10 NOS canisters, how would you rate the fastness and furiousness of this movie?
I'll say that I think this one, as much as it like is important to like the rest of it, I think this one is boring. I think this is a sort of more of a boring movie compared to like how fun the other ones, the first three are, even like even more than I don't think it's worse than Tokyo Drift as a movie, but I think Tokyo Drift is more fun than Fast and Furious. Because I think this one for me has a lot more CG than I would care for in one of these movies, which then becomes like the whole thing that like, they do a lot of they have a lot less CG going in. There's still a lot of it, but there's less. And then the CG that they do have later on is crazier. So for me, 10 out of 10 canisters of Nas, I would say this is about maybe like a 5.5 for me. Mm. Not one of my favorite ones.
Okay. Yeah, that's okay. I feel like Alonzo might feel the same way.
This is like a 4 for me. Like, it's still better than Too Fast, Too Furious. But, and again, you know, I think it does. Ultimately, as we look backwards at it, I think this becomes like the shitty opening act you have to sit through to get to the band you really like. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, reassembling these folks would become more interesting later. It wasn't interesting yet. So, yeah, this is in the lower tier part of the franchise for me, no question.
I agree. This would be a 5 for me in Fastest and Furiousness, because it's bringing together the components. It's not necessarily the most fun ride or even the most ridiculous, but the best thing about this movie is the landing. It's where it ends up. It's the idea that it sets their whole new criminal enterprise. Like, it's Dom is sentenced to 25 years, and it just ends with, like, clearly Brian has, like, left law enforcement behind. They're kind of all going renegade, and they're going to bust him out of this prison bus. And that's the most exciting ending, because it gives mm-hmm. you this idea of where they're going from there. And that ending alone, like, makes me appreciate what this film does for the overall franchise.
It's such a great promise.
Yes.
Yeah. Fast and Furious. Yeah, I agree with everyone. And honestly, looking at it, it's 8 years after the first one. So it feels like it's almost like a retelling. It's like sitting through when you see a friend after a long time, you have to sit and catch up before you get to the chisme and the good stuff before you have the real conversation. And that's really what it felt like. We
so reestablished.
yeah. We reestablished these characters as they were in the first film. Like, that, I mean, it was cool seeing, like, the, like, chase scene, the introduction as they run through, but it also did feel weird that after the events of both the first two movies that he still wants to be a cop. that was interesting. But in the end, yeah, I like that it ends on a cliffhanger and said, we're not done yet. I'm real excited of Justin Lin not only getting Han back in the fray, but going setting us up. And I think it sets up Fast Five in a big way, because it does build up Vin Diesel as this powerful monster who will soon be dwarfed in the next movie by Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who is the hugest human alive. So for that, I'm going to say I'll give it a 6 out of 5. I mean, 6 out of 10 canisters. I was about to give it a great score. I had to walk it back. All right. Well, we're gonna head up out of here, and we'll be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
Judge Don Hodgman won a Webby in the comedy podcast category. After 10 years of production, Judge Don Hodgman has finally won the Susan Lucci of the Webbies. What is Judge Don Hodgman?
Comedy writer and television personality John Hodgman settles disputes between friends, family, co-workers, partners, and more.
Is Machine Gun a robot?
Should a grown adult tell his parents about his tattoos?
Should a family be compelled to wear matching outfits on vacation?
Listen to Judge John Hodgman to find out the answers to these age-old disputes and more.
If you haven't listened to Judge John Hodgman, now is a great time to start.
Judge John Hodgman is available on MaximumFun.org and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ivy Wadiway. In the studio with me are...
Alonzo Duraldi.
Matt Apodaca.
Drea Clark.
Now comes the moment where we must decide which movie will move on to compete against last week's winning film, the original, The Fast and the Furious. I know this is a difficult decision, but we must decide whether The Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift and Fast and Furious wins the drag race. Drea, we'll start with you. Who wins the race for you?
All right, for me, this is The Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. Mm-hmm. I think it is a stronger film. Mm-hmm. I do not think it is going for the same points. It's not on the same scoring system as Fast and Furious or other films in the franchise, but I think it is stronger overall and should be rewarded for that, at least in this very entry heat. Mm. That's my vote.
Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift for everything we've mentioned. Plus, none of us have said Sunny Chiba yet.
Sunny Chiba was going to be in it.
Cinema legend Sunny Chiba. So yeah, all the reasons
as
for
a
sure,
Yakuza
Tokyo Drift.
Boss. I mean, come on.
I'm having a hard time because I rated Tokyo Drift.
Go with your heart, Matt. Do not
Tokyo
let
Drift
these
lower.
Esteemed film reviewers.
Let the man have the floor.
I guess in my mind, I want to say, even though I think Tokyo Drift is maybe a slightly better movie, I like the idea of The Fast and the Furious facing off against Fast and Furious. So that's how I'm going to go.
All right. Thank you for not betraying my heart. Yeah, it's going to be Fast and Furious because I'm automatically disqualifying Tokyo Drift for not thinking of ridiculous ways to use cars to solve problems, because the way that they used it to solve a problem was a completely normal logical and expected way. So you're out.
So is Casey our tiebreaker?
Oh yeah.
Ooh yeah.
I got out of this game a long time ago.
He takes the bus.
Casey takes bus.
But if I have to get brought back in, I'm gonna have to go with Fast and Furious.
Wow.
Because if you look at the scope of the whole series, I think it establishes what becomes of the entire series, and what it sets the floor for Furious 5.
Fast Five.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, that's going to be real fun trying to remember which one is Fast, which one is Furious.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm going to go with Fast and Furious.
Well, if he gets to say that not liking Too Fast, Too Furious makes you anti-black, then I will say not liking Tokyo Drift makes you anti-Asian.
I argue against it because oh my gosh, I'm just looking over at good representations of the community. It's all good.
Okay, so then we move on to the next heat.
Yep.
So then it's Fast and the Furious
versus.
We've ended up where Matt wants us with the Fast and the Furious versus the Fast ampersand Furious.
Okay, the Fast and the Furious then. Absolutely.
Yeah,
the
I knew this was going to. This is going to be a bloodbath. We're all going to pick the Fast and the Furious.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
easy.
Nobody's picking Fast and Furious.
Oh.
It would have been the same outcome either way, I think, but.
Yeah. Exactly.
No. I mean, I knew we had to stop. This is one of those games where we had to stop the drift now because the drift might have gone all the way, and I had to.
Oh my god!
The drift would have. I know, Drea DeLonta. I don't know.
Next week is five and six. And
yeah,
it's all,
I get serious next week.
I caught myself and started to renege. Yeah, that's gonna. I'm gonna.
Ooh,
this
yeah.
game. Yeah, going on this game. I don't even know what's gonna happen. And before we get to staff picks, since we discussing nothing but Fast and Furious films for the next couple of weeks, we wanted to spend some time highlighting an indie film that's out now so that the Universal conglomerate doesn't get all of your money. So this is the Indie Movie Minute. Alonzo, I believe you have a movie you'd like to discuss, and your time starts now.
So my Indie Movie Minute this week is for a film called And Then We Danced. It is from the former Soviet Republic of Georgia. It is about two male dancers who fall in love in the process of trying to get into the prestigious National Georgian Ensemble. Georgian dance is a very specific kind of dance, and there's a lot of obsession about how masculine it is and how it has to be performed in a certain way that is very butch, and this comes up a lot in the movie. And so against this backdrop, these two guys sort of find themselves falling for each other in a very homophobic society, and in fact how homophobic that society is was reflected when the movie opened there and was immediately protested, and the cops had to be called, and there was a lot of controversy surrounding this film in its home country, but it has made its way around the world. It's a really gorgeous film. The dancing is great. The acting is really good. There are a lot of really terrific sequences. It was Sweden's entry to the Oscars last year. And it's a dynamite movie, and, comes from a corner of the world that we don't see a lot of films from. And so I think for a lot of people, it's going to be a revelation in a lot of different ways. It is streaming on various platforms. It is sharing profits with various different venues. I would suggest if you go to outfest.org, the Los Angeles LGBT Film Festival will get part of the proceeds from your rental of And Then We Danced.
Oh, I like that. So go ahead, head to outfest.org and see that movie. Let's go ahead and get a quick, I'm gonna add on to the minute to get a quick, how much are we gonna cry when we watch it, Alonzo?
It's actually more uplifting. It actually has an ending that almost kind of reminded me of Flashdance. There's a defiant audition, and I love those. And if you watch it at Outfest, the director of programming, Mike Daugherty, does an interview with the two leads from the film that you can watch afterwards. So it's almost like going to a festival and watching a Q&A.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's a banger. That's a 5 out of 5 slaps. Don't miss that. All right. All right, now now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie, in theaters, streaming, and what have you. Matt, why don't you start?
The movie I'm recommending is a movie called Green Room. It is a sort of like horror thriller movie, and I'll just give you the quick plot synopsis here from IMDb. A punk rock band is forced to fight for survival after witnessing a murder at a neo-Nazi skinhead bar. It's a very claustrophobic, like, good, like, it's just, it's rad. It's a few years old, 2015, but the cast is so good. Anton Yelchin, Imogen Poots, Alia Shawkat, Patrick Stewart is the head of the neo-Nazis in this thing, and it's brutal. It's just a gory, like, very, like, yeah, claustrophobic, basically like escape movie, and it's so good. The first time I watched it, I was like jealous. I was like, I would have liked to have made this, but it's I don't think I've seen a movie like that in a while, and I think about it a lot. So that's my recommendation.
Yeah, that was actually one of my staff picks a couple of weeks ago.
Oh.
And then when we were saying movies that take place in one place, that was my pick.
Oh,
what
wow.
I'm saying, Matt, is get some original ideas. Okay, dude, when you come onto this movie podcast, you got movie cinema pros.
That just
we watch
goes to
films
show
like
you
Judy
how good friends
here, okay?
We are. We're on the same wavelength.
Okay, well, have you seen Judy?
Which one?
Judy.
Nah, I haven't seen Judy.
Yeah. Step your film game up.
Matt, you told us you'd listen to every episode.
That is true. I do. I have an iffy filter on mine.
Amazing.
No, great pick. I love that pick. What about you, Drea? What you got?
Mine is actually going to be Justin Lin's inaugural film, Better Luck Tomorrow.
Ooh.
Which we talked about earlier. I think it's it was in the 2002 Sundance Film Festival, and it does a lot of interesting things beyond introducing the character of Han and that gorgeous actor into the rest of our world. But it was kind of renowned at the time for having a lot of, it centers around these a group of Asian American dudes who are in high school who start like selling illegal papers, like school papers, and then it escalates into a very real crime drama. And the idea of the anti-heroes that these guys represent, who start as very sort of formulaic, overachieving, good at math and sciences, Asian American dudes. And Justin Lin was subverting a lot with it, but also just having fun as a filmmaker trying to kind of establish his voice. And it's interesting. And especially if you're watching Fast and Furious along with us or on your own, I always like to see what are studios identifying in new filmmakers that's kind of aligning them with hearing their pitches on bigger budget films. And this is a good way to kind of see what Justin Lin was bringing to the table at a very early stage in his career.
Very good. Very good. And Alonzo, what is your pick?
So on the day that we're taping this, a couple things are happening. One, it is the launch of the new HBO Max streaming service.
Yeah.
But we also had the very heartbreaking news that Larry Kramer passed away, and he went from being a studio executive to a screenwriter. He was nominated for an Oscar for his adaptation of D.H. Lawrence's Women in Love, and then wrote the very groundbreaking 70s novel, the still controversial Faggots. The title that only I get to say on this show. And then, of course, becoming a playwright. Well, you know, we won a Tony for The Normal Heart. But also, very importantly, he was one of the first loud, angry AIDS activists. He co-founded Gay Men's Health Crisis. And then a year later, after the rest of the board of directors kicked him out of it, he started ACT UP, which really kind of changed the game as far as taking protests to the government, to the Catholic Church, to the media, to anybody that needed to hear it. Larry Kramer was loud and strident in a time that needed loud stridency, and he's one of my personal heroes. Anyway, there's a great documentary about his life called Larry Kramer in Love and Anger, and you can watch it on HBO Max or on HBO Go or HBO Now. It premiered at Sundance a few years ago, and I think just really tells an amazing story of an extraordinary American life and one who changed a lot of lives, mine included.
Yeah, I did, that's phenomenal. And I think, you know, a lot of phenomenal films have been picked in our staff picks, and I'm going to continue with a phenomenal short. I meant to do this last week, but you know, it's not too late to check out this short. It's only 6 minutes long. directed by Philip G. Atwell, produced by Chris Palladino, written by Keith Donnelly. This is the Turbocharged prelude for Too Fast, Too Furious, where you get to see the what happens between the Fast and Furious and Too Fast, Too Furious. And I mentioned it briefly last
episode. Is it a Honda prelude, Iffy?
I still to this day, oh my God, it just works something so deep because it's so obviously a 3000 GT. You can watch it on YouTube. If you're wondering what happened, it's a silent film. It's very it's kind of cheesy, but in a good way. Think you know if you're watching through this with us, and you want every piece of the Fast journey, I think you need to check it out.
Not to mention
what about
the
Netflix cartoon.
Oh my God! No, I'm gonna say no to that because I auditioned for it and they didn't let me. They didn't pick me. I was like, me, the Fast head. You know, I was rooting for you.
I'm in the family.
All right. It's time for something a little different. Instead of five-star review this week, we're going to read a wonderful email we got from listener Marina Belli all the way from Italy. I think Andrea's going to head it off.
This is from listener Marina Belli from Italy, who wanted us to know, since we'll be talking about the third and fourth movies in the next episode, here are a couple of pieces of silly international trivia about the franchise. It all started in 2001 when the first movie arrived in my home country of Italy. My friends and I are quite convinced there must be a cabal of creatives, we've named them the Evil Council of Italian Title Writers, that gets a special thrill from adapting movie titles in ways that make no sense at all. They are the ones who transformed Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind to If You Leave Me, I'll Erase You. Great title. And in 2001, they decided that the two loose articles in the title, The Fast and the Furious, were too complicated for the poor Italian audience, so the movie was and still is distributed as Fast and Furious. Fast forward to 2009, from the U.S. arrives Fast and Furious, the fourth installment. The evil council trembles. What have they done? How can they fix this problem? Someone has a genius idea. Let's add a subtitle. That's how the fourth movie here got distributed as Fast and Furious, Solo Parti Originali. Translation, original parts only. From there on, they decided to play it safe. Each subsequent installment had just been distributed as Fast and Furious, followed by its number, with F9 set to be distributed as Fast and Furious 9, The Fast Saga. Why? Who knows? To date, there's only one movie of this whole franchise that was distributed in Italy with its the where it should be in the title, and it's The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift. All other movies lost their thes, maybe to be lighter and thus go faster, or maybe simply because the evil council of Italian title writers is scared by the article the when placed in the title. After all, the Meg here became Meg il primo squalo, that is, Meg the first shark. This is an amazing, yeah. I love the insight to wow. Italian
international movie titles are bananas.
Oh, yeah. That was great. Thanks, Marina.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, that was great. Matt, thank you for joining us. Anything that you would like to plug?
For me, just you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Matt Apodaca. You'll see all my stuff there. I was just happy to talk with you guys and talk about these works of art, these the true cinema.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks it was a good here. Time. And again, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. And just a reminder that you can buy a Jumbotron on our show by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/Who Shot Your Podcast. Or send us the email at whoshotcha@maximumfun.org. Alonzo, Drea, you guys are great. Thank you for sitting in and going on this journey with me, putting up with all my car talk. Look, I know you didn't know you had a grease monkey.
We knew.
Live a quarter mile at a time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but also family. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.